Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Life.
Love.
And health.
I'm Christopher Springman, and you're part of Life, Love, and Health on Radio MD. Have you ever read a book and said, "This is the story of my life, loves, and passion"? Well, I just finished one that tells that story. If you consider yourself to be a creative person or are in love with one, trust me, you'll find yourself or them between the pages of An Absorbing Erin by our next guest, Jenna Malamud-Smith. It's nice to have you on Life, Love, and Health, Jenna.
Thank you.
You know, I have a warm spot in my heart, in my soul, for powerful, independent, creative, and tactile women. Especially artists, painters, and photographers specifically. You know, years ago, I photographed artist Georgia O'Keeffe at her home in Abiquiú, New Mexico. I was 24, fell madly in love with her, and alas, kept looking for a rerun with several lovers and a wife, all of whom were highly creative artists.
Wow.
Now, there is a significant section in your book on an extraordinary filmmaker, a legend who inspired directors like George Lucas, Ridley Scott, even producer Mel Brooks of The Producers. Her name is Leni Riefenstahl, a cinematographer who produced two epic documentaries in the mid-1930s, Triumph of the Will, about the Nuremberg rallies, and Olympiad, about the 1936 Olympics. Her efforts were sponsored by the Nazi Party and her patron, Adolf Hitler. You essentially give a case history of Leni Riefenstahl in your book, An Absorbing Errand, How Artists and Craftsmen Make Their Way for Mastery. You're rather torn. It's complicated, at times neurotic in the way you describe her work. Tell me about that, please.
Absolutely. I am torn. Not so much, I mean, Leni Riefenstahl was really an interesting woman. She was extremely ambitious, and she would do almost anything for her art. When she was a young woman, before she became a filmmaker behind the camera, she acted, and what she was sort of famous for was doing anything it took to get the scene, and, you know, if it meant climbing barefoot on a icy mountainside and risking her life, she would do that. So she had enormous energy, enormous vitality, and enormous ambition. And what I use her for in my book is to talk about what I call ruthlessness in artists. You know, how much will you do for the work of art? What will you sacrifice in your own life? And what will you sacrifice in the lives of people around you? And what will you trade in order to make it big with your art? And what's so fascinating about Leni Riefenstahl is that she's sort of the poster child for making what, in retrospect, looks like a pretty bad trade, which is to become essentially Hitler's confidant, maybe his mistress, who knows, but his number one go-to girl during the time that he was most actively building the image of Nazism.
You know, you also mention in this section that Leni Riefenstahl said, "Reality doesn't interest me." You know, and I was drawn to this because for years I've said reality is overrated.
Right. Well, you know, reality is mostly unbearable. I mean, this is where on my psychotherapist hat and say that most of us can only stand a little bit of it, and that's why we have such rich inner lives that we can escape to. But the problem with her point of view, reality doesn't interest me, is that when you are the chief front person for arguing the virtues of Nazism, it's a tricky position, and ethically, let's just say, you know, grotesquely compromised across time.
Well, speaking of tricky positions, how's that for a segue?
Okay.
You have the temerity, the audacity to compare her, to segue out of that section to a discussion of Lady Gaga. Isn't that tortured logic?
Well,
that'd be a good title for a book.
Tortured logic. Tell me how you think it's tortured logic, and then we'll go from there.
Well, it's a curious analogy because you discuss Lady Gaga, Stefani, by saying, "I know of no performer alive who seeks fame as ferociously and ably as she does."
Yes.
As she herself noted, "I will kill to get what I need," emphasis added. Yet, she disavows her ruthlessness even as she badly states it. What's that about?
Baldly states it, yeah. Well, what I was saying is, and, you know, Lady Gaga is certainly a very different person from Leni Riefenstahl, let me be really clear about that. But she does share some features, which is that she has a kind of unlimited willingness to play out her ambition. And I think the difference in her struggle in Riefenstahl's is that she really also wants to be seen as a good person. And that's something that I think we've overlaid on people in our era. We all have to be kind of nice, good people, even as we might be many other things. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that that's a terribly hard double burden for somebody who's wants to make their art. You know, I think in the past, no artist really thought that they had to be a nice person in quite the same way we do now.
And so, carrying that burden all by herself, it seems, is Jana Malamud-Smith, who's the author of An Absorbing Errand, subtitled How Artists and Craftsmen Make Their Way to Mastery. May I offer you an alternative to Lady Gaga?
Sure.
Oh, you're very, very kind. In fact, yes is the right answer. A better analogy, I think, would be to compare the careers of my former art school roommate, Annie Leibovitz, a pretty decent photographer. And yeah. I'm going to take a little bit of artistic license here. So let's compare Lenny and Annie. Both received a career-making once-in-a-lifetime, once-in-a-generation opportunity to capture the zeitgeist of the culture, and I know how much you love loanwords. And both women had patrons who were Svengali's, Hitler and Jan Wenner. Both of these men gave these women full artistic license, unprecedented access to the famous and powerful of the day, an open checkbook, and no worries about national distribution. And more importantly, they didn't have to beg or borrow to market their talents. So instead of worrying about selling their talents, a huge draining and frustrating effort for creative folks with little or no business sense, they were able to create in a very open and unbridled way. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, it's an interesting analogy, and I don't know the details of Leibovitz's life as well as you do. However, I think that having a patron is every artist's greatest wish.
Right, right. Everybody wants the advantage of a full-time job with the freedom of being a freelancer.
Exactly. But whether or not it's always a favor is a harder question.
Well, there is a price to pay, isn't there?
Right, and I think the price is sometimes covert, that the patron wants things back from you that maybe not aren't on the table of contents. But in general, I would say for Leibovitz, it was a very lucky thing. It would be my guess. What do you think?
Oh, I agree completely. She was the right person in the right place at the right time, and she seized the ring. You know, it's interesting. I had dinner with Annie several years ago, shortly after Irving Penn died.
Uh-huh.
That was in 2009. Richard Avedon and Helmut Newton, two other extraordinary photographers, died in 2004. And I asked Annie, after Penn passed, what's the best part of being the world's most famous photographer? And she said, people don't put you on hold. Which is a very interesting self-effacing comment, but it said to me that she understood the value of access. Because she was a celebrity, a peer, and a star, A-list access and a high level of cooperation, plus the budget to pull it off,
Think, right, and I think that's all true and all wonderful. And I think maybe the most important thing for your listeners or for that I would want to add for this is that even when you come to your art with enormous talent and you work at it really, really hard, there's another characteristic that is part of it, which is how good you are at making just the kinds of links that Annie Leibovitz was good at
making. Exactly.
And not everybody is good at that. And so you can have a person of extraordinary talent, like the poet Gerard Manley Hopkins, for example, who never takes his manuscript out of the drawer the whole time he's alive. So, you know, he just happened to have the good luck of posterity finding him. But most of the time, if those two talents are separated, and they are for most of us, it means that you live your life at the level in which you can manage to live it.
Please stay with us. We'll be back with our guest, Jana Malamud-Smith, author of An Absorbing Errand. I'm Christopher Springman on Radio MD. This is Your Life, Love, and Health.